This is 89.9 WWNO. I'm Janae Pierre, and it's time for All Things New Orleans. On today's show, we'll chat with award-winning jazz and gospel vocalist Liz Wright. Then Jessica Rosegard returns with Cityscapes columnist Richard Campanella. And later, we'll chat with our friends from the Ogden Museum of Southern Art. That's all coming up on All Things New Orleans. Stay with us.
This old house, walls are crumbling underneath a painted sky. When the real thing is out there waiting, deep and wide as it is high. From this dry well, you can hear the river running by.
Award-winning jazz and gospel artist Liz Wright will perform a free concert on Tuesday, January 16th, to celebrate the National Day of Racial Healing. She joins me now to talk about the concert and more. Liz, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Good to be here with you.
So this concert is part of the Kellogg Foundation's National Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation Tour. How did you become a part of that effort?
Wow, that's a good question. I actually was involved with a school that is led by one of Kellogg's grantees, Monica Haslip, and the Little Black Pearl Art and Design Academy in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And so as I got to be involved with the teachers and the students at Little Black Pearl in Chicago, I got to know Monica Haslip better, and then I learned about the Kellogg Foundation, and I learned about the work of Dr. Gail Christopher and the Truth and Racial Healing and Transformation Initiative was just beginning, and I was very curious, and I actually hosted a conference for them in Asheville, North Carolina. I did it remotely and gathered a curation of local artists and poets to do a presentation for them during a conference, and so we've just begun this relationship since then. I guess it was about 3 years ago, and I'm just really honored to be a part.
And you're balancing that because it happened right in the middle of your music career, so you're balancing all of that, right?
Yes, and I think it's perfect. There are a lot of artists out there, like myself, who want to be connected to a cause that they believe in, but we don't have the energy or, you know, the information, you know, to build opportunities like this. So I'm very happy to be a part of this work, and really happy that already I've been able to bring other artists into it. And I hope to be able to continue doing that. It brings a lot of relief to know that you're participating directly in a cause like this.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the legendary Nina Simone was quoted saying that it's an artist's duty to reflect the times in which we live. And I'm sure you can attest to that.
That's actually my favorite quote of hers. I've watched that video segment of her interview over and over again. And it's been a great influence on me, and I believe with all my heart that, you know, we make our art for, you know, these reasons of personal pleasure and personal journeys, and at the same time, we do have this obligation to, you know, to mirror what's happening, and in a way, through art and nature, we get to see what we're doing. They're very objective, but very open languages, and I think their art and nature are a big part of trying to do this kind of work. It keeps things open and keeps us from, you know, having relationships of conflict and really being able to get to the heart of, like, of the positions that we've come to hold.
You have this song called Painted Sky, Don't Give Up on Us, which serves as the anthem for the National Day of Racial Healing. Let's talk about the underlying message within that song.
I went to write this song with my favorite collaborator, Maya Sharp. Maya Sharp is a beautiful songwriter, and I knew that I needed to take the intention to write something like this to her, because we write fast and we really like to build very carefully. And so over a course of a couple of days, we tackled this idea of trying to write a song that, again, held no one to blame and that didn't separate people, but that separated the reality we've created, separated it from the vastness and the abundance of nature. And so we wanted to make a comparison between the life that we've chosen of seeing ourselves and one another in these very fixed ways, in this kind of hierarchy of human value, which is a term that I've come to understand. And then, you know, inviting ourselves and inviting one another to come out from that very limited perspective and see life as it is, our interconnectedness and our opportunities. And I liked trying to illustrate that notion with coming out from under a sky that's been created to be everything and seeing the real thing.
He's trying to make it easy, giving it away free. We want to pay. Love sitting on our fingertips, waiting on the edge of our lips. We don't know what to say. Don't give up on us. Don't give up on us, love.
Now, this concert you're putting on Tuesday is part of your National Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation promotional tour. What's the next stop, and what's the response that you guys have been receiving from people?
Well, I've been able to visit 3 of the, I believe, 10 cities where the Kellogg Foundation has institutions set up that are a part of this TRHD initiative. So what I enjoy doing is going there, doing the concert, inviting local artists, learning about, you know, what they're doing and seeing how we can help, and bringing my audience to the work. You know, I just did it in Los Angeles when I played Catalina's Jazz Bar and Grill. And some friends from my local foundation that's in the TRHD network got up and talked about what they were doing, and my audience kept applauding throughout their explanation because they were so excited to know that there are people who are completely focused on this kind of work and they want to be a part of it. And so I'm excited. I want to keep going to all of the cities that the Kellogg Foundation is supporting for this initiative and just make sure they feel supported. I want to help rally their local artists because, again, I believe that art is a great language to get across these kind of intentions. And I'm just excited to see what we do. I think the idea of truth and racial healing and transformation is approached and is manifested a little bit differently based on local culture. But so I'm just excited to see what everyone's going to do, and I'm glad that I get to contribute to it.
That was award-winning jazz and gospel vocalist Liz Wright. Thanks for joining me today.
It's my pleasure.
Catch Liz Wright in concert Tuesday, January 16th at the Mahalia Jackson Theater to celebrate the National Day of Racial Healing. The event is free and open to the public. This event is in partnership with the Foundation for Louisiana, which is a financial supporter of WWNO. Time now for our monthly check-in with Richard Campanella, geographer with the Tulane School of Architecture. Campanella is the author of Cityscapes, A Geographer's View of the New Orleans Area, a column published monthly by NOLA.com, The Times-Picayune. Here's WWNO's Jessica Rosegard.
Richard, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Today we're discussing your piece about the New Basin Canal, and you start by setting the scene in the mid-1800s. New Orleans' population was growing, and there was a need for food and construction resources, many of which could be found in Lake Pontchartrain.
The Lake Pontchartrain Basin. There's finfish, there's shellfish, there's game, but most importantly for the development of the city, there is pine, there is tar, pitch, and good clay for brickmaking. And so since late Spanish colonial times, there's been attempts to try to streamline that connection of that flow of natural resources coming from the whole basin into New Orleans.
What there wasn't was adequate infrastructure, right?
And the federal government at that time, and this also applies to the colonial powers, was weak and distant. And so a lot of early infrastructure was actually developed by the private sector, and particularly banks. They were known as improvement banks. And that is what brings us the New Basin Canal.
Yeah, you mentioned the funding and the development of a company.
New Orleans Canal and Banking Company, that was their official name. And it was really a global enterprise. And you could think of the New Basin Canal as an example of early kind of global capital. They receive a charter in 1831 to create what they originally called the Basin Canal. And what they were looking to do was to compete with the Carondelet Canal that had been in place for about 35 years, as well as the about-to-open Pontchartrain Railroad. Both of those assets were on the Creole side of town, and they opened up lake trade to the lower neighborhoods. And so Anglo-American investors on the upper side of town wanted a piece of the action. So they get a charter through the state to create this Basin Canal, and they capitalize at over $4 million, which is a tidy sum in those days. They sell stock from Royal Street, but also in offices in Philadelphia, Boston, New York, and even London. So it really is a global project.
The last time we talked about shipping and the use of what's now the Lafitte Greenway leading to Bayou St. John, leading to Lake Pontchartrain. So where in the timeline does this New Basin Canal fit with that?
This follows it, and it's a competitor of it. The Basin Canal excavation begins in 1832, and it would be about a mile from the turning basin of the Carondelet Canal, now Lafitte's Greenway. And so the route, if you picture the base of the Plaza Tower, Loyola Avenue, right by the parking lot of the Union Terminal Railroad Station, the turning basin would have been located there. One stretch of the New Basin Canal would have followed I-10 from the base of the Plaza Tower to where the cemeteries are. And then from there, it dog-legged to what is now the very wide neutral ground between West End Boulevard and Pontchartrain Boulevard, exiting into a mini port that was created at Lake Pontchartrain. And then from there, they could go to Madisonville, they could go to Mandeville. And so excavation completes by 1838. The labor, as opposed to the Carondelet Canal, which came mostly from forced and slave labor and also prison labor, the Canal and Banking Company utilized, again, the global labor market in the form of mostly Irish immigrants paid about a dollar a day who suffered really terrible conditions. Now, many New Orleanians might have heard that extraordinary numbers of Irish ditchers, as they were called, perished during this excavation. Certainly many did, but it's not the numbers that one often sees in the secondary literature. You see figures such as 10,000 or 14,000. The numbers weren't that big. Where that probably comes from is the deaths that from a terrible cholera epidemic that occurred around the same time and location as the New Basin Canal. And the historical memory has kind of conflated those two. And so when the canal opened, a couple of things happened. First of all, it was almost an immediate success. It's much wider and deeper and better than the Carondelet Canal. And so New Orleanians, with their penchant for nicknames, start to call the Basin Canal the New Basin Canal and rename or re-nickname the Carondelet Canal as the Old Basin Canal. And so the two, over the better part of the next century, are competitors.
So what caused the demise of the New Basin Canal?
Modern transportation technology led to the demise of both the Old Basin and the New Basin Canal. The advent of motorboats meant that the schooners and luggers that came in were becoming obsolete. The advent of the combustible engine and the rise of, most importantly, trucks. Trucks with refrigerators could get seafood and oysters into downtown much more efficiently. And increasingly, New Orleanians came to view these waterways as urban nuisances as well as obstacles, because they cut off a whole bunch of streets and now people are driving these streets. So the beginning of the end of the New Basin Canal comes again with a state decision in 1936, almost 100 years after the canal was completed, to begin filling it in. And the section from the turning basin at where Loyola is up to around where the cemeteries are is filled in between the late 30s and 1950, and then the rest of it is filled in a few years thereafter. The only section now of the New Basin Canal that still exists is paradoxically both the youngest and the oldest section. When the lakefront was built in the 1920s, the New Basin Canal was still in place. And so the last few hundred feet of the canal at its lakefront exit was constructed. Meanwhile, the rest of it 30 years later is filled in, except for the part that goes through the lakefront. So this is the little canal with the yachts along it by the Southern Yacht Club by West End, is the last open section of the New Basin Canal, even though it's also the youngest part of it. The rest of it survives in the cityscape, though not as a waterway. Every time folks drive from the Superdome area to the cemeteries, you are precisely on top of that original 1830s bed. And that suspiciously wide neutral ground between West End Boulevard and Pontchartrain Boulevard is also part of the old bed.
Richard Campanella is a professor of geography at the Tulane School of Architecture. His Cityscapes column can be found every month on NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. Ogden Museum of Southern Art will host programming for Martin Luther King Day inspired by their current exhibition, Solidary and Solitary, the Joyna Gifrida Collection. Joining me now is the museum's communications manager, Melissa Kenyon, and curator, Bradley Sumrall. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So Monday's holiday commemorating the life and work of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is a day of service. Melissa, go ahead and tell us what's on the agenda.
Yes, thank you. So we have a number of free activities available for people of all ages. We have our activities based on abstract works by Solidary and Solitary artists, including drape painting inspired by Sam Gilliam, abstract expressionist painting inspired by Norman Lewis, and abstract mobiles inspired by Mark Bradford's waterfall sculpture. Guests can also participate in sign making inspired by the civil rights movement and create dream walls inspired by Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech. And anyone can get involved. We'll also have scavenger hunts, and kids will receive coloring books if they complete the scavenger hunts. And adults will receive passes to Ogden After Hours, our Thursday concert series.
A scavenger hunt at the museum.
It's a good way to get people exploring in the museum and allows them to learn about art and just kind of explore.
Mm-hmm.
Also that evening, we have a yoga class, also free for adults, from 6 to 7:15 with Mark Berger and Kim Doley. And people can sign up for that at our website, ogdenmuseum.org.
Now, Bradley, you're a curator at the Ogden. What can viewers expect while browsing this exhibition?
Well, this is really an exciting moment for the Ogden Museum of Art to be able to present this kind of world-class exhibition. The Joyner Gifrida Collection tells a story that not even any museum collection could tell. Since 1999, they've been building this collection of African-American artists and African diaspora artists who work in the abstract style. And it ranges from the 1940s to now. So over 70 years of art production from African and African-American artists are represented here. Now, this exhibition highlights 12 artists from the Joyner Gifrida Collection.
Okay.
And it's organized in a series of solos and duets. So the solos you'll see are from, giants like Norman Lewis and Sam Gilliam, mm-hmm. and then rising stars like Lynette Yodomboke. But then there's these beautiful duets, like between Mark Bradford and Jack Whitten, one of the old guard artists who was really pushing the boundaries of his craft, kind of the rising stars, or actually the risen star. Mark Bradford's kind of the anointed one in the art world today. So there's those beautiful moments where these two artists' work are speaking to one another across generational lines and together there at the Ogden Museum. There's also Melvin Edwards, who's another old guard artist that I'm very excited to have at the Ogden Museum, and Leonardo Drew, who is a rising star. And their works really speak beautifully to one another, and again, across generational lines.
Now let's talk briefly about how this exhibition, Solidary and Solitary, coincides with Martin Luther King Day and the Civil Rights Movement.
Well, this exhibition is kind of righting the wrongs of the past. These are artists that have been left out of the modern art canon, because there was pressure on artists at the time where if you were an African-American artist, you were expected to make black art. Mm-hmm. And these artists wanted to make art. They wanted to be known first and foremost as artists. And so their style developed abstractly without this larger narrative, or with a more subtle narrative of the civil rights movement and the struggle. So they were left out of many exhibitions over the years. And actually, that's one of the genius of this collection is Pamela Joyner, who was really the guiding force that started this collection in 99. And she's a powerful woman in the art world and is involved with the Tate Modern and other major museum boards. And she would see these major exhibitions of abstract art and say, well, why aren't there any black artists in this show? She knew they existed. She had seen the work. And why weren't they included? And the kind of answer that she usually got, well, nobody collected this art, so we don't have access to this art. Mm. And she said, well, I'll fix that.
Yeah, and she started an entire collection.
An entire collection that is just world class. And so now, you know, the Ogden Museum, in partnership with the Baltimore Museum of Art, is able to bring, to kind of fix the canon, fix the mistakes of the past. And so the struggle goes on, you know,
yeah.
And it's playing out on the walls of the Ogden Museum. So we thought it was a perfect time to make that tie with Martin Luther King. And this celebration.
And with all that said, I know that you mentioned that this collection is primarily focused on abstract art, but what makes that so meaningful?
Well, as I said before, you know, there was a real struggle to place this narrative in the work. There were all black art by black artists had to be black art. And these are artists that worked in an abstract style, which often resists those kind of political statements. Norman Lewis said that he believed that activism and art were both powerful forces that existed better separately in his world, you know, because he wanted to create work that was just about the work itself and his own personal vision and not something larger. But he was also very active in the civil rights movement and the civil rights struggle, but that was separate from the art itself. But abstraction was the guiding force of the art world for many, many years, and unfortunately was dominated by white men. And so this exhibition seeks to rectify that omission.
Now, Melissa, this exhibition has been on view since September.
Yes.
Why was it so important for the Ogden to keep it running through Martin Luther King Day?
Yeah, definitely. So people can come and see it at the Ogden till January 21st. And that was always kind of the ending date. And we figured we usually closed on MLK Day. And we thought, oh, this would be just a great opportunity to welcome the community to the Ogden and make sure that they can see the exhibition before it closes. So we partnered with the Hales Foundation to make this free programming available.
That was Melissa Kenyon, Communications Manager for the Ogden Museum of Southern Art, and Curator Bradley Sumrall. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
MLK Day at the Ogden Museum is Monday, beginning at 10 a.m., with free admission all day for visitors of all ages. For more information, visit ogdenmuseum.org. Interested in other MLK Day events? You can join the City of New Orleans as it celebrates Martin Luther King Jr. at the historic A.L. Davis Park on January 15th from 9 a.m. until 10, followed by the Community Block Party held at the historic Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard from noon until 4. And that's it for this week's edition of All Things New Orleans. I'm Janae Pierre. You can follow me on Twitter at Miss Janae Pierre and tweet me comments or questions. Would you like to suggest a guest or topic? Send an email to Janae at WWNO.org. That's J-A-N-A-E at WWNO.org. Visit our website to check out previous shows and be sure to catch us next week. Right here on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans and 90.5 KTLN Thibodeau Houma. Thanks for joining us. Underwriting programming on WWNO New Orleans Public Radio is a great way to support this station. And it's also a very effective way to reach informed, civic-minded, and educated adults in the New Orleans region with information about your business, service, or organization. Find out how WWNO 89.9 FM can help grow your business by emailing underwriting@wwno.org.